The Flaming Forest by James Oliver Curwood. Chapter 1. An hour ago, under the marvelous canopy of the blue northern sky, David Carrigan, sergeant in His Most Excellent Majesty's Royal Northwest Mounted Police, had hummed softly to himself and had thanked God that he was alive. He had blessed McVane, superintendent of N Division at Athabasca Landing, for detailing him to the mission on which he was bent. He was glad that he was traveling alone, and in the deep forest, and that for many weeks his adventure would carry him deeper and deeper into his beloved north. Making his noonday tea over a fire at the edge of the river, with the green forest crowding like an inundation on three sides of him, he had come to the conclusion, for the hundredth time perhaps, that it was a nice thing to be alone in the world, for he was on what his comrades at the landing called a bad assignment. "If anything happens to me," Carrigan had said to McVane, "there isn't anybody in particular to notify. I lost out in the matter of family a long time ago." He was not a man who talked much about himself, even to the superintendent of N Division, yet there were a thousand who loved Dave Carrigan, and many who placed their confidence in him. Superintendent McVane had one story which he might have told, but he kept it to himself, instinctively sensing the sacredness of it. Even Carrigan did not know that the one thing which never passed his lips was known to McVane. Of that, too, he had been thinking an hour ago. It was the thing which, first of all, had driven him into the north. And though it had twisted and disrupted the earth under his feet for a time, it had brought its compensation. For he had come to love the North with a passionate devotion. It was, in a way, his God. It seemed to him that the time had never been when he had lived any other life than this under the open skies. He was 37 now, a bit of a philosopher, as philosophy comes to one in a sun-cleaned and unpolluted air, a good-humored brother of humanity, even when he put manacles on other men's wrists, graying a little over the temples, and a lover of life. Above all else, he was that, a lover of life, a worshipper at the shrine of God's country. So he sat that hour ago, deep in the wilderness 80 miles north of Athabasca Landing, congratulating himself on the present conditions of his existence. 180 miles farther on was Fort McMurray, and another 200 beyond that was Chippewyan, and still beyond that, the Mackenzie and its 1,500-mile trail to the northern sea. He was glad there was no end to this world of his. He was glad there were few people in it. But these people he loved. That hour ago he had looked out on the river, as two York boats had forged up against the stream, craft like the long, slim galleys of old, brought over through the Churchill and Clearwater countries from Hudson's Bay. There were 8 rowers in each boat. They were singing. Their voices rolled between the walls of the forests. Their naked arms and shoulders glistened in the sun. They rowed like Vikings, and to him they were symbols of the freedom of the world. He had watched them until they were gone upstream, but it was a long time before the chanting of their voices had died away. And then he had risen from beside his tiny fire, and had stretched himself until his muscles cracked. It was good to feel the blood running red and strong in one's veins at the age of 37. For Carrigan felt the thrill of these days when strong men were coming out of the north, days when the glory of June hung over the land, when out of the deep wilderness threaded by the three rivers came romance and courage and red-blooded men and women of an almost forgotten people to laugh and sing and barter for a time with the outpost guardians of a younger and more progressive world. It was north of 54, and the waters of a continent flowed toward the Arctic Sea. Yet soon would the strawberries be crushing red underfoot. The forest road was in bloom. Scarlet fire-flowers reddened the trail. Wild hyacinths and golden-freckled violets played hide-and-seek with the forget-me-nots in the meadows, and the sky was a great splash of